Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, kids, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I'm an editor here at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as he always is the smirking senior writer, Jonathan Strickland.
Hey there.
You're smirking at my opening my kids thing, right?
Yeah.
I just thought I'd mix it up a little.
It was.
I never mix it up a little.
That's, well, yeah, it's good to...
I'm humorless.
That's true. That's true. Chris... Killjoy Paulette. That's what we call him here in the office at HowStuffWorks.com.
It's sad.
Yeah.
I would find some humor in it, but I don't. Never mind. Okay. Well,
it's better than Josh Creepy Hands Clark. So,
true.
I mean, you know, we've all got our own little monikers. I won't go into mine because, you know, modesty forbids. But let's start this off with a little listener mail. This mail comes from Mark. Mark says, "Dear Tech Stuff, thanks for a great podcast. I was wondering about how wireless home networks work when my dad was talking about upgrading ours and didn't know what the different network types were, such as wireless G and wireless N, and how networking new and not so new computers work and if it will cause any problems. I think it would be an interesting topic for a podcast because so many people have home networks now. Anyway, thanks again for the great podcast. Your seventh grade fan, Mark." Well, Mark, we thought we'd talk a little bit about the different kinds of wireless networks out there, the ones that use the various standards set out by our good friends at the IEEE, or as I always like to call them, IE.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you know, early networks were sort of like tin cans with the string between them.
Yeah.
This sort of makes the string virtual.
Yeah. There you go. That's all you needed to know.
There you go. Well, thanks very much.
We're going to get mail now.
She's going to get me. Yeah.
All right. So anyway, we're talking about a set of standards that in general fall under the designation 802.11. Isn't that easy?
Yeah. Well, it's the most, those are the most common frequency, variations of wireless networking. Yes.
Right. So, the way you, you'll see on things like routers and modems and stuff, you'll see this number followed by a letter, and that tells you which of the specific sets of standards you're working with. Now, you gotta understand what.
Yeah, I was getting ready to correct myself.
Oh,
because I said frequency, and that's not a frequency.
No, no, no.
It is just a designation.
It is a designation, yes. So the IEEE, they work on various, designations for different, networking solutions. And with the 802.11, you have different working groups all working on different sets of standards to try and create the most stable and reliable form of wireless networking. In this case, wireless networking. And it's a little confusing because you have all these different groups working from the same basic set of standards, but they're all tweaking them in different ways to try and get different kinds of performance out of them. So let's try and go through some of these. It's really kind of complex, but,
yeah, one of the things that's kind of interesting about these different standards is, as we start going through them, if we are going through them in alphabetical order, you will find that they do not necessarily start from the bottom up. Like if we start with 802.11a, this actually operates on the 5 gigahertz frequency and can carry up to 54 megabits of data per second.
Right.
In contrast, 802.11b, you'd figure it'd be faster. No, actually, it's not. It operates at the 2.4 gigahertz frequency and only can handle 11 megabits of data per second.
Right.
And that's just one of those things that makes it so confusing is you'd figure there'd be a logical progression there, and there's not necessarily one.
Yeah. So what do you think? Should we go by just by letter, even though it's not logical progression necessarily, but just to make it easier to move from one to the other?
Well, those two do fit well together because they were the first two – very common standards,
right?
At least in my experience.
Well, 802.11b uses unregulated radio signal frequencies, in the 2.4 gigahertz range. So, here's some things about the 802.11b.
Okay.
Set of standards.
Sure.
Its signal range is pretty good, in the 2.4 gigahertz range, and it's not going to have problems with obstructions that some other frequencies do. So, in other words, you might be able to use this kind of signal through walls, things like that. You don't have to worry about losing signal as soon as you turn a corner from the source of the frequency. Mm-hmm. And it's not very expensive. The range is pretty good, but it's not a very... It's not very fast, as you pointed out.
Yeah.
It, you know, compared to 802.11a, it's fairly slow. And because it's an unregulated frequency, some other appliances that generate radio frequencies can cause interference within that wireless frequency. Because you have to remember, the computer you're using, whatever, like if you have a wireless router that's broadcasting Wi-Fi on this set of standards, if it's using unregulated radio frequencies, that means that it can fall within a wider range, and that things that also generate radio frequencies within that range, when you're using your computer doesn't know which of those signals are coming from your router and which are coming from other devices. So that's where you get your interference.
And if you're saying, what kind of interference could you possibly be talking about? Well, we're talking about things like your cordless phone in your house, for example, or perhaps an alarm system where you have wireless the devices that go above your windows and doors. Mm-hmm. If it, you know, it uses radio frequencies to talk to the main box, and baby monitors, stuff like that. Those are all using, you know, those radio frequencies in those ranges.
Yeah.
And of course you can buy cordless phones that are in a overuse that word, range of different frequencies.
Sure.
So you could try to get around that, but that's one of those things that I think they've been trying to improve is cut down on some of the interference. And that's why 802.11a uses the orthogonal frequency division multiplexing. Basically, it's it's just a system of splitting down that signal into a group of subsignals.
Gotcha.
To kind of make it less likely that you're going to be interfered with. It breaks it down so that it's not all in one signal.
Right. So you're not gonna have the same interference issues.
You shouldn't.
And again, like we pointed out, it is faster. 802.11a is faster than 802.11b, but range is shorter. It's mm-hmm. not, it doesn't go as far. And because of the frequencies it uses, it's a little more easily obstructed. So you can't necessarily broadcast through several walls. If you have a large house and you've got a wireless router in the middle, then you may notice that as you move away, you start having problems getting a signal.
I also suggest that you don't make your walls out of lead.
Yeah, I never again.
Yeah.
Never again. I tell you one thing. You know what? You make your walls out of lead and you invite Superman over, the dude is just a total jerk face the entire time.
Well, he's accustomed to be able to seeing through everything.
Right. He's just standing around staring at the walls and just mumbling curses. I can't even repeat the things that man says.
Nice.
He just, what a mouth on that guy. At any rate.
I had no idea that my little joke would turn so awry.
No, but tell you what, Green Lantern is awesome. You get a few drinks in him. So 802.11a, faster, shorter range. Also was more expensive. Both A and B were being worked on at the same time.
Yeah.
B was, even though B was slower, it was less expensive and had a greater range. So it caught on a lot faster than A did. A was much more expensive, so you didn't really see that getting adopted in home networks as much. But that brings us up to 802.11G.
Yes. We skipped a few letters and specifications.
Here. Yes. Not that, yeah, I mean, you could, if you look up all these different numbers, with IE, you'll see that there are all these different working groups that are working on various projects that have different designations. But it gets way too complex to talk about all that, especially since it doesn't really relate to what we're talking about here with home networking.
Right.
So 802.11G.
Yeah, that was A and B were popular together for a while. And then G was a good sized leap forward, I would say.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's been the standard. It's been widely adopted up until just recently, but we'll get into that in a moment. 802.11G also uses the 2.4 gigahertz spectrum, just like 802.11b. Mm-hmm. However, it is much faster.
Bandwidth up to 54 megabits per second, as I see before me. That's the figure I have.
Yeah, that's the number I have as well.
That's really fast speed. And it's actually it has really much better range.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easily obstructed. So it's kind of taking the best of both worlds here.
Yeah.
It's
it
got
is.
The range and the penetration of 802.11b and the speed just the speed of 802.11a. But it's a little more expensive, or at least it was more expensive than 802.11b. It took a while for that to kind of become the standard in home networks, but that did become the standard shortly after it was introduced.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, so you would look on routers and you would see if it, you know, which standards it was, compatible with, and 802.11G became more and more common.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, had another problem with the fact that it had the unregulated signal, just like 802.11B did. So, again, there was at least the potential for signals to have some interference issues if you had a lot of other wireless technologies running in the house. A lot of kids running around on walkie-talkies or, you know.
Over.
Exactly. I'll never be over it. I'm never over kids over at my house on walkie-talkies. That is just the most distracting thing in the world.
Especially because you don't have kids?
Yeah.
You people?
How did you get into my house?
Yeah.
Did Superman let you in? Has he not gotten over the lead walls thing yet?
you know.
Does that bring us up to 802.11n?
Yes, and up until very, very recently, this was not an approved standard. However, you know, I have seen from looking at the Wi-Fi Alliance's website that 802.11n is actually an accepted specification at this time, which was supposed to happen this year. So, you know, that those of you who are going, yeah, okay, so where's the surprise in that? No, that's right on time. They're supposed to do that this year. Basically, you're supposed to be able to get a lot better range with 802.11n.
And speed.
And speed, for that matter. That was one of the things when I got a new wireless access point a few months ago, and it had a proposed 802.11n specification in it. You know, since I am sitting right next to, or almost right next to the access point, I find the range is great.
Yeah.
But,
if you are right next to it as if you could actually plug your device into it with a physical wire, and how great the range is.
Details, details. Actually, when I was down the hall, I actually moved the computer since then. It was giving me a much better range than the old one. So, you know, it was an improvement. But yeah, the 802.11n is supposed to get you up to 140 megabits per second, which is pretty speedy.
Yeah, that's
considering I can't even get my DSL connection near that fast.
Right. So you were asking Mark about the difficulties in networking if you have different machines running on different that require different standards. Yes, that will be a problem because you have to have the right. It's like an antenna. You have to have the right kind of antenna to pick up the right kind of frequency.
Yeah, and it sort of depends on what kind of card you have. Sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
You need to have something that will receive these signals in your computer.
Yes.
You know, you can get cards that are built right in, and there are also different kinds of cards that you can add on and aftermarket, depending on what kind of computer you have.
Yeah. And many of these cards can actually accept more than one standard. Like they'll say it'll be, you know, you'll see like a B/N or something like that, or N/G or.
Yeah, chances are actually if you go out and buy whatever off the shelf now, it's going to be N compatible and backwards compatible with the other three standards.
Which is great. I mean, if you don't have those compatible ones, then obviously if you were to have an old 802.11g wireless card in a laptop and you got an 802.11n router,
it's not going to do you any good.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to access those faster speeds because you're limited by it's kind of the weakest link in the chain kind of thing.
Yeah.
You're limited by whatever your least fast device is going to be. In that chain from router to computer. Mm-hmm. So, it can cause a little issue. It's not as bad as you might think because most routers and modems that have been sold in the last few years have really kind of ironed out a lot of the compatibility issues.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, again, it's kind of confusing because the standards do evolve over time, and the group is always working on different projects that mean that, you know, within another 5 or 6 years, we may see something different. And not only that, but we have other networking technologies that also come into play that can be a little confusing. There's Bluetooth.
Actually, it's funny you mentioned that. Well, I was getting ready to mention Bluetooth.
Oh, please do.
There are a couple different standards of Bluetooth technology. Now, Bluetooth, in general has a shorter, distance that you can use it with.
A smaller range. Yes.
Yeah. That's what I meant.
Yes.
Thank you for fixing that.
No worries. Hey, who's the editor here?
Yeah. Well, that would be me. except when I'm talking, this is why I edit.
Yeah.
It actually operates on a frequency of 2.45 gigahertz. Generally between 2.402 and 2.480 if you're, you know, splitting hairs.
For those of you taking notes.
Yeah, yeah. And you can, you know, connect up to 8 devices. I don't think a lot of people use Bluetooth to connect a lot of devices to their computer, except maybe like a wireless keyboard or mouse.
Maybe a printer.
Maybe a printer. Sometimes your phone. I had a phone that used Bluetooth and I could drag and drop files over. Like if I wanted to change ringtones, I could make an MP3 and, you know, connect with it wirelessly.
The promise of Bluetooth is really, really cool in the sense that you can have this personal area network.
Yeah.
And you know, the network would constantly be changing depending on what devices you brought within the scope of that network. So you could bring two devices together and it creates one network. You bring those two devices toward a third device and you've got a new network. You take one device away. It's a really flexible, and dynamic system. It's really, really cool. I don't think anyone uses it to its potential.
Yeah.
Really. No one I know of uses Bluetooth. Like the people who use Bluetooth that I know are using the very, very basic. So it's
like
normally the headset and the phone, the handset.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. Or some of them are using some sort of handset and a car, mm-hmm. like the car that's Bluetooth enabled so that the handset syncs with the car and they can listen to music or they can use a GPS system, something like that. Or even use the car's sound system for if they're taking on calls or things of that nature. But again, it's still, you're talking about a two device maximum there as opposed to what the real potential for Bluetooth is.
I know somebody else is going to write in too, now that I think about it, another device that you might see people use with their, Bluetooth enabled computer would be a set of headphones.
Yeah.
That's pretty common.
That's true. That's true. That is another common one.
Yeah.
Another kind of wireless standard I was going to talk about was WiMAX.
Yep.
So WiMAX and Wi-Fi are two different things. They are not the same. You often will see the media reference WiMAX as saying something like Wi-Fi on steroids, which is
that's an oversimplification.
Yeah, it's definitely an oversimplification. Yes, WiMAX has a greater range than Wi-Fi standards.
Yeah, because it can reach up to 30 miles, I believe.
Right, something like
somewhere
that.
Somewhere around there.
And so WiMAX has a much larger range, and yes, you can get very fast downlink and uplink speeds on WiMAX, or relatively fast anyway.
About 70 megabits per second.
So, yeah, that's pretty fast. I mean, it's still not as fast as, you know, 802.11n, but still.
Yes, but you're not going to get 802.11n much past, the street in front of your house.
Yeah, you're not going to – that's the other thing, is that when we talk about these speeds, we're talking about the maximum that those devices are capable of generating. That doesn't necessarily mean that's the speed you will experience.
Oh, that's
true. You will
experience
it based upon what your ISP provides to you.
Yeah, actually, when I was saying a few minutes ago that my DSL struggles to reach 1.5 megabit per second – you know, I have my router now is an 802.11n. I'm never going to see anything faster than 1.5 megabits per second because that's as fast as it's going to go. Now, if I connect with another computer, if I have, you know, say my music library on one computer, I want to move it to another, I can move it at that speed.
Right.
Provided the cards in both computers will reach that speed.
So data transfers within your network will go at the ideal speed.
Right.
But data coming into or moving out of your network to the outside world, the internet, is going to move at whatever speed the internet service provider has designated or what your current technology is capable of delivering.
Yeah. So the slowest point of connection in this case would be my, you know, pipe to the outside world and everything else is regulated by that.
Right. Everything inside, super fast. Everything outside, not so fast. Still fast, just not nearly as fast.
Yes,
we sit there and think about how slow this is, but then we sit there and like, hey, do you remember those baud modems?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so it's very fast compared to dial-up modems. But anyway, so WiMAX, getting back to WiMAX.
Yes.
It's a totally different set of standards.
802.16.
I like to describe WiMAX the way I tried to describe it to someone. In how it works, if you want to try and visualize it with an analogy, is imagine a big circular building that has a set number of doors along the perimeter of the building. So we'll say 40. Mm-hmm. There are 40 doors along the perimeter of the building. That means that 40 people can walk in and out of that building, carrying stuff in and taking stuff out. So those 40 people, that would be people connecting to the WiMAX tower to get data. So,
right.
So home networks necessary. Pretty much.
Okay.
And after those 40 doors are taken up by the various people, that's it. It's not going to accept any more people on that tower, which means that every single person is going to still get the speeds that they were promised.
Right.
You know, there's no choking because there's no bottleneck there because the tower has cut off the number of people who can connect to it. Wi-Fi is different. Wi-Fi, people just keep piling in and out. There's like one big set of doors and everyone is trying to get in and out of that set of doors at the same time. So the more people are trying to access a Wi-Fi spot, the slower you're going to experience, the slower the data rates will be, the slower data transfer rates will be.
That makes sense.
because it does not limit the number like WiMAX does. So it's a different approach, really. And WiMAX, of course, is just one of the 4G solutions that we're looking at in the future. There are others as well.
Such as LTE, which is long-term evolution. It looks like those two are going to be fighting it out to be the 4G standard, depending on whom you ask and
where you live
and what company you happen to be working for that is backing which standard at the time.
Here in Atlanta, we're actually seeing WiMAX now. And a few other cities in the United States also have WiMAX now, and more are expected to get it within the next year.
Yep, but LTE is on its way, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and that's also being giving the fast track in development.
Mm-hmm. I do want to clarify, though, just to make certain that everyone understands that if you have a Wi-Fi card, 802.11 A, B, G, or N, those may or may not be compatible with, you know, a particular card or, you know, a plug-in for your computer. But Bluetooth and WiMAX are going to require their own separate thing. They're not related. You can't get one card, as far as I know, you can't get one card that will get all of those frequencies, you know, in one thing that you can plug into your machine. You're looking at probably three.
Yeah.
You know.
Although I guess you could argue that WiMAX could replace Wi-Fi, except unless you're if you're doing home networking stuff, if you're trying to actually transfer data between machines in your home network, then you will need something. Because WiMAX, it's reporting back to the internet service provider. It's not a home networking solution.
Well, okay, that's actually a good point, because the particular WiMAX provider that is advertising in the Atlanta area shows off that you can have your laptop with you and get access anywhere. You could be on the bus, you could be, you know, at a sidewalk cafe, you could be at your home, and you're still going to get your WiMAX speed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great. However, if you're using – basically what they're showing off is a dongle-type card modem thing.
Yes.
That's the scientific term for it.
Yes, the dongle-type modem card thing.
Yes, yes.
I think it's on the box.
Okay. So anyway, you plug the thing in the side of your computer and you can go anywhere. What happens if you go home and you want to hook up, say, your spouse's computer? Well, now
she
you're kind of –
does not need the internet.
Well, see, that's
what is she going to do with it?
Okay. So then you're stuck. That's no more home networking. If all you have is that one type of, connectivity, they offer this, the WiMAX provider also offers a home modem, and then you could plug that into a Wi-Fi connection. But if you want to get, you know, the WiMAX all around town, you're going to have the portable.
A lot of
so that's a difference.
It does have, it
you
does.
You might actually have a WiMAX and a Wi-Fi.
Well, yeah, that's true. I've seen the packages I've seen usually involve you can get one of each. You can get one that's the home solution where you hook that up to your router. So,
but you have to buy both of them.
Yes. But there's some that's like a package deal though. So you're getting a discount as opposed to if you were buying each separately.
They just function differently is all.
Yes. Yes. So yes, you would still have to have your wireless router. Mm-hmm. That's working on the Wi-Fi.
If you want to hook up all your computers to.
Yes, exactly. And within your home. And then you would have the WiMAX dongle for whichever computer you have designated as the main one whenever you're heading outside the house and you want to be able to hook directly to your ISP. The nice thing about that is you don't have to pay for any other like Wi-Fi services, any hotspots or anything like that. And you don't have to depend upon because with the WiMAX
within range.
Yeah, you're connecting right to the WiMAX thing tower, not to Wi-Fi networks.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know that's a big problem for us, us being me and my wife. When we're traveling around town, we have to hope that wherever we're going has a Wi-Fi network and that hopefully it's a Wi-Fi network where we don't have to pay extra to get attached to it. Because when you're already paying an internet service provider to get access to the internet, you kind of hate the thought of having to pay again. Because you're like, hey, if we were home, we could access this based on our plan. We wouldn't have to pay extra. So, yeah, we get a little
miffed.
Yeah, mightily miffed.
Well,
great was the miffage thereof. All right. Well, I think that that pretty much covers the whole Wi-Fi angle.
Yeah, I'm sure we've confused everyone by now.
I know I'm more confused than when we started. So good job.
Awesome.
Well, you know, I guess that means that it's time to wrap things up with a little listener mail. This listener mail comes from Casey. Hey guys, I love the podcast. I had a quick question for you. I've heard that Mac and Linux operating systems don't get viruses like Windows computers do. As far as I can tell, I haven't even heard of a virus protection software for my Leopard running operating system. Is this because the Unix base that Mac and Linux were built on is less susceptible, or because Windows is a little easier to target because of how mainstream their operating system is? Keep up the good work, and I would love to hear the answer to this sometime. Well, Casey, first of all, let's address a couple things. Linux does not have a Unix base.
No, technically it does not.
It was inspired. Linux was inspired by Unix, or rather we should say Linus was inspired by Unix. Actually, he was inspired by,
Minix.
Minix, which in turn was a kind of open source alternative to Unix.
Yes.
So you have Unix, you had the open source alternative to Unix called Minix, you had Linus Torvalds, who was then inspired by Minix to create Linux. So, let's get that out of the way. As for, are they just naturally less susceptible? Not technically. I mean, it's more challenging to create the something that exploits a vulnerability in Linux or Mac, because you've got in the case of Linux, you've got a community that is dedicated to finding these things out and fixing them before they become problems. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that it's impossible. It just means it's more challenging because you've got the entire worldwide Linux community working on this stuff, even though there are various distributions and each distribution is slightly different from each other distribution. Mac, you've got a closed system, which is harder to get into and learn how that works, because Apple controls the whole Mac situation from the hardware to the operating system. Even so, it is possible to create programs that exploit vulnerabilities. We've seen that both in Macs and in Linux systems. Recently, we've seen some that went that even exploited vulnerabilities or could exploit a vulnerability within the Linux kernel itself. That doesn't mean that they're as vulnerable as a Windows system. Your question of, is Windows more vulnerable because it's more popular? In a way, yes.
It's certainly more popular with hackers.
For one thing, I mean, it's more accessible.
Yep.
Also, more people are using Windows, so therefore your target is, you've got a target-rich environment is what our friends in the military would call it.
Yes. Uh-huh.
It means that if you do write some malicious software, you're going to hit way more victims if you do it for Windows than you're going to hit if you use it for Mac or Linux, just because there are more people using Windows out there than the alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at some of the vulnerabilities that exploit server software, that's all Linux-based stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, almost all of it. Not all of it. Don't write me. I know not all of it, but a great deal of it. So it is possible. It's just not as common.
Yeah. And there are a couple of security providers who have written Mac virus software and has been out for many, many years now.
Actually, I think Snow Leopard came with some antivirus under the hood.
Yeah. It's sort of invisible.
Yeah,
actually, not like I've actually noticed it. Let me put it that way.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, and the one I would say that is arguably the largest, is a company called Intego, and they're the ones who always draw attention to, vulnerabilities when they are pointed out. And, they usually get sort of picked on, some of the stuff that I've read, because they go, oh yeah, well, you guys are the ones writing the software. Of course, that's what happens when Symantec or McAfee also points out that there are vulnerabilities out there. I mean, they have a vested interest in keeping that, in mind. But a lot of cases too, the Mac stuff scans for Windows, malware as well, which is useful if you're running an Intel Mac and happen to be running and happen to have an installation of Windows and the Mac operating system
right,
on your Mac.
You dual booted.
So, you know, it can be handy, but a lot of people in the Mac world still believe that their position is very secure and do not use antivirus software.
Right. Now, that does not mean if you have a Mac or Linux machine that you should go clicking on every single link and installing every single application you come across, because you never know when that vulnerability will be discovered and exploited. Here's the tricky thing about hackers who find vulnerabilities. Some of them don't make it public knowledge. And so it may be, you know, that it's constantly a game of let's catch up to what the hackers know and then patch it. So just be careful. Yeah, Macs and Linux machines aren't going to experience them as often as Windows are, just in general, but it's not outside the realm of possibility.
I'd just like to throw this one last thing out there. For everybody who is using any kind of computer on any kind of operating system, keep in mind there are vulnerabilities in the operating system, and security software patch is there to protect you from malware that has been discovered.
Yeah,
but as long as there's a vulnerability,
from anything that hasn't been discovered.
That's right. As long as there's a vulnerability and someone is there to exploit it and nobody knows about it yet. So it's best to keep up your guard and pay attention to what you're doing. That is the best security procedure you can have.
Wise words to live by from Tech Stuff. Thanks, Casey. If any of you have any questions, comments, concerns, suggestions for podcasts, please write us. We love getting the mail. I know that I've been a little slow answering mail recently, but we do read each and every single email that comes in. You can email us. Our address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com. And Crispy and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the new TechStuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.